Hello, all, and Happy New Year, Grays fans! After a break for the holidays, executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers are back with a recap of the first two episodes of 2009 and some tantalizing hints at what's to come in the next episode, Stairway to Heaven, airing on Thursday, January 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on ABC.
Hi, this is Shonda.
And this is Betsy.
And this is Grey's Anatomy.
Happy winter! Over here, it's certainly warm here. I hear it's
I hear there's lots and lots of snow every place else.
Very, very cold everywhere
else. You have my sympathies, but here it's about 85 degrees.
It is now. It was a really, really whoppingly, terrifyingly cold 50.
For a while.
I think for a while, and it pretty much tested all the limits of our survival out here.
Yeah, because we really don't know how to handle that. Now, I grew up, you know, in the suburbs of Chicago, so I should really be more comfortable with the cold and the snow, but I don't know what's happened.
I grew up on Long Island, and I should be too, but that doesn't change the fact that apparently my blood got thin.
Anyway, I say embrace the snow, enjoy the snow.
I say make snow angels.
And snowmen.
There you go. There you go. We're at sort of, Seattle Grace is in quite a state, I would say. Given the fact that we have the arrival of, I would say, a special VIP patient. Who's unlike any VIP patient we've ever had in the history of Seattle Grace.
I'm very excited about our patient.
I think it's an incredible thing. And we should talk a little bit about the process of getting Eric Stoltz.
Yeah, too. I mean, you may notice that Eric Stoltz directed a couple of episodes for us.
We always loved him as an actor, but we really knew him here as a director.
He was directing an episode, and I marched over to the stage, and I said, how do you feel about playing a serial killer? And since he was in the middle of directing, I think he thought I was either crazy or trying to find a way to fire him in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically ignored me. And then Betsy and I started to stalk him and hunt him down and show up weird places like the editing room and tell him how he should play a serial killer, which is a little bit insulting. But there's nothing serial killer-like about Eric Stoltz.
He's very, very lovely.
It was, in fact, that he was very unlike a serial killer that made him interesting.
And we wanted to find somebody who was inherently sympathetic and also kind of sexy.
Now, a little bit cute. Yeah,
just for the record, if you want to get Eric Stoltz to do something, cry.
Yes.
That's what I found.
Puppy dog eyes work often.
Puppy dog eyes work really, really well, and I found that if I actually could start to cry, it actually helped.
It did.
But we did good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, I was bad cop, you were good cop.
And then we swapped.
Yeah, then we swapped.
So I think overall, it was a great thing that we got him, even though we manipulated him to a place of no return.
We basically tortured the man.
We basically did and threatened him in a
but
weird,
I
indirect,
think it's paid
way.
Off immensely because he's amazing as William Dunn.
Absolutely mesmerizing. And there's a moment in the last week's episode where you understand what he did.
I love that moment.
Which is so great because I love this guy. He's funny. He's witty. He's so impressive. And the reactions between Christina and Meredith, who, by the way, are still fighting.
Yeah.
Christina and Meredith, where Christina, it's a little bit like, see?
And Meredith just stunned.
Is just absolutely stunned. He's so casual and nonchalant about it, but yet he's really sexy in this really odd way.
There was a lot of debate in the writer's room about that. I mean, when we started to talk about what he did, everybody wanted it to be like he accidentally killed a bunch of people.
No.
Or he, you know, killed his wife and her lover. And I was like, no, he should be a real bad, like, we should not have a question about whether or not he's a bad man who has done very bad things. I think that that was important to me, to have a patient in the hospital who, no matter what, no matter how charming and how lovely, is basically irredeemable.
Absolutely. And also, that's the only way that Derek's position can be solid, because
yes,
Derek needs to be taking the position that this man is below sympathy.
Yeah.
He's somehow or another somebody who should not be sympathized with because of things that he's done to other people. And then we learn from Derek why he feels that way, which certainly informs.
His dad was shot by two guys for his watch, which
exactly.
We also loved. It's nice to be able to reveal new stuff about our characters even after all this time to give you little snippets and details that tell you a little bit more about who they are.
And it also tells me so much that he's never revealed it before.
Yeah, right. The fact that he's never revealed it means a lot. And I feel like you knew that he had a father who had died. You know that he has five sisters and this mom. But you don't know anything else about sort of why his dad died or what happened to him. And I think it's really interesting to be able to reveal that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And also that when he dances it out with Meredith, he's kind of dancing it out for himself too.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. And by the way, how cute was he?
Here's the thing. He was so willing to go there. He danced for hours.
Hours.
And was really funny every time. And really was willing to look goofy. and actually in real life is a very good dancer. So I think it was not an easy thing to make himself look as goofy as he did, but he was so game to do it. It was really charming.
No, he's done like, he did that movie where he like danced and stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
The man has skills.
He does have skills. So he kind of hit his skills, but come on, that was really charmingly cute. Yeah. That was hot. I'm sorry. That was
and just... I also thought, like, what a good guy. What a good guy to do this for his girlfriend.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think,
very sweet.
I think absolutely. And I think that's where the bond between the two of them, weirdly enough right now, because the relationship with Christina is so suffering, which is how Izzy's ended up sort of stepping in a
yes.
very unique way.
That is one of my week. Favorite things that we've ever done, which is have Izzy take over because Derek's mom is coming and try to turn Meredith basically into Izzy. The alarmingly high ponytail was one of our most favorite things ever. And Ellen Pompeo popping around the set with an alarmingly high ponytail and a pink top on was hilarious because she really did look like a pop star.
She totally did.
And she did little pop star moves on set and sort of bounced around and sort of kept saying, like, I should have my own video because it was hilarious see dark, twisty Meredith in pink and a ponytail.
And there's also really something funny about her dealing with William Dunn, the serial killer, with a poppy pink ponytail.
Yes,
I
love.
The contrast between her with that ridiculous hairdo and Dunn and his dilemma.
Yeah, is fantastic.
And
I love the scene where Meredith tells him all the details about... You know, it's true. In the state of Washington, you have a choice in how you're executed. You can either be executed by hanging or executed by lethal injection, which we were shocked to find out that they still hang people. But apparently, they've executed 6 people in the past, I'd say 10, 15 years in Washington. 3 of them chose hanging as a way of being executed. Chose hanging. If you don't choose, they automatically do lethal injection. And so I thought it was just an amazing scene to have. We got that detail. It was an amazing scene to have Meredith talk about the difference between dying by hanging and dying by lethal injection. So clinically and so dispassionately. It was just amazing.
Yeah, I think that was absolutely incredible. And I think this whole introduction of this little boy.
Yeah.
And his dilemma.
Jackson Prescott.
And this man and how in this framework... They're connected whether they like it or not. The ultimate innocence.
I love
and
how
the
stories converge.
Corruption.
Because for Bailey, you know, what I love is that for Bailey, this is her real first foray into peds in a way that we're doing with the peds surgeon and everything. She's lost the original guy she's been working with. She feels so strongly about this family. To have that converge kind of in a way that you don't expect with Meredith's story was lovely. And we had been planning this for a long time and really loved the idea that you have a child who is, you know, where William is definitely bad, a child who is as pure as Jackson Prescott is all good. And how horrific it is, the idea that somebody this good could die and somebody this bad could live, albeit for a few days, and these organs could be wasted was heartbreaking.
Well, and in addition, when you think about last week's episode and the whole idea that Bailey, in essence, when we meet Arizona, who's such a fabulous character anyway, mm-hmm. but... When Arizona essentially almost kind of accuses her of medical neglect in that the other option was to get the kid on the transplant list, the double weight of the fact that there's this extra load of mm-hmm. shoulda, coulda, woulda for Bailey that she has to now make up, which is, I hope I was doing the best thing for this kid. I hope. And they're her favorite patients.
Yeah. And I love Arizona. I love her sort of the arrogance of any surgeon coming into a case and being sort of young and brash and saying basically like older doctors like to do this, but really you should have done this. And then wheeling away on her little skates.
Which is hysterical.
We loved. And those details came from actual peds surgeons. You know, they wear the little wheelies. Some of them wear the little wheelies on their shoes. They wear little bears on their coats. And it's not just to seem cute. Part of it is to bond with the kids, but also like, you'll notice she has like, I think a bear on one side of her lab coat
yes.
and like a giraffe on the other side. And it's for doing medical exams. You tell a little kid, look at the bear, look at the giraffe, and that's how you do your neural exams. It's not about, you know, just being cutesy.
Good, because if that was a style choice, I think we'd definitely question her.
She's definitely cooler
outside
of her scrubs.
And I think eventually, hopefully, we'll see her outside of her scrubs
exactly.
if we play her cards right, which is good.
We should mention my favorite thing ever that we got, and I feel like the biggest coup in the world, which is we got
oh, yeah.
Ms.
Oh,
Tyne
yeah.
Daly to come in and play Derek's mom. And literally, like, I'd been stomping around saying that Tyne Daly was Derek's mom.
She stomped.
I've been like, Tyne Daly is Derek's mom.
Yeah, she did.
And Tyne Daly, you know, she doesn't live in L.A. It was hard to get, you know, hard to get her here. She was perfectly willing to do it. But it was like a thing to bring in Tyne Daly to do this role. And she was incredible.
We were lucky, too, because she just finished doing a play. She's got an incredibly busy schedule. She's always doing theater. She's always working. And our timing actually happened to work out.
But literally, I think she flew all night, stepped off the plane, came to set, and did that first scene. The first scene that she shot was the one with Lexi, where she holds her face and says, "Are you a good girl?" She literally stepped out of her car, stepped onto set, grabbed Lexi's face and said, "Are you a good girl?" And I just wanted to, like, burst into applause because it was perfect. She's exactly who you want to be Derek's mom.
And it's exactly who you've pictured all these years. So.
Yeah, and you know that that woman raised that man. Like, she raises good men.
Look at her brother.
Yeah, and she's a... Tim Daly.
Yeah, yes. Tim Daly. It's like, you know, the family. I mean, for God's sakes, we could...
Private practice.
10 p.m. Thursday nights, by the way.
You want to check that out. It's a daily sandwich.
So it's sort of nice to know that we have a big old Daly love fest going on.
Exactly. But it was great to have her, and I felt like the moments that she played with Patrick, that, you know, the moments between the mom and Derek were... That was extraordinarily beautiful at the end. Like, that sort of bond that he has with his mother tells you so much about why he's so good with women.
Exactly.
And why he can be such an open, loving guy. It was great to see. And why he's such a good man.
Yeah, because when you finally saw the mother... And it's funny because all these years, you sort of waited and wondered. You've heard about her.
Yeah.
And McSteamy talked about the fact that, you know, it was sort of the surrogate home, and we knew that from Addison. But to actually see this amazingly strong, intense woman who used to be a nurse, who is... the salt of the earth, who really raised everyone around her.
And the reason why I made her a military nurse was I really wanted her to have a background that was strong woman, medical background, you know, tough as nails, have to be tough as nails in your job, and yet is the exact opposite of Ellis Gray. The exact emotional opposite of Ellis Gray. And that was interesting to me. Like, warm where Ellis was cold, and yet had basically, you know, for all intents and purposes, a similar background.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I love that.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense.
The other thing we should talk about is Christina and Owen. Christina and Owen go out on a date.
Yes, they do.
Or at least they try to.
It doesn't quite go as planned.
We talked about this a lot in the writer's room as well. We really had some great battles about this. You know, whether or not it was okay for Owen to show up for a date drunk. And I was like, it's absolutely not okay. That's what makes it interesting. But then he comes and he shows up drunk and he's holding flowers. He's wearing a beautiful suit and he's holding flowers and you can tell he was going to make it. He was going to try. And then Derek's mom asks him how he's sleeping at night. And that's really sort of what sends him off to have a few drinks before he goes on the date. A little liquid courage that doesn't work out at all. And then there's that amazing scene where he climbs in Christina's shower and tells her what his best surgery and his worst was, which is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
He could show up, by the way, just for the record, he could show up drunk on a date for me, and I'd be okay. just I'm putting it out there.
Ladies, it's never okay to go out on a date with a drunk man.
This is a little bit like listening to the smart person and the stupid person. It's like Goofus and Gallant.
Smart choices, single women.
And I'm saying, boy, come on. He brought flowers.
And that's Kevin McKidd was awesome because, A, we had exactly one gorgeous Armani suit, one, which he put on, and then they turned on the shower, and I'm not kidding, he stood there soaking wet for about 6 hours doing that scene, over and over and over again, never complained once, and, like, then they turned around, they did it on Christina's coverage, and he still stood under the shower soaking wet. And did it again. Like, he was incredible.
He's an amazing sport.
It was just a powerful, powerful, lovely scene. And I love Christina's face when she steps into the shower with him. And it's such a different relationship than she had with Burke. It's very much, he's a man who really needs to be taken care of. And he is a wounded animal. And Burke was always so healthy and whole. And, you know, until he hurt his hand, was so healthy and whole and healed. And Christina was always got to run scared from that. Like, in a weird way, it made it safe for her to run scared. And now she can't possibly be the one who runs.
No, in the competitive angle with Burke, because there was always a little bit, as soon as she started doing all of his surgeries for him or helping him, there was always this underlying aspect of competition with Burke because they were so much the same way.
Well, she wanted to be Burke.
Exactly.
As opposed to,
she
this is
to be
very
Owen.
Different. No, you don't want to be Owen.
You don't want to be Owen.
But you want to love him.
Oh, you sure do. You sure do. Shower, nice suit, whole thing.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It is.
It's a shame there's no Owens out there just knocking on my door.
There may be some Owens out there. They just haven't knocked yet. But there
aren't right now.
That's true.
Which is why we write them.
Maybe they're in motion.
maybe they're coming.
They could. Big old flock Owens.
Hurry up.
There you go. Exactly.
You
know, the other thing I'd like to, from last week, talk a little bit about is the Chief.
Yes.
Because that's honestly, personally, one of my favorite things is when the leader gives up.
It's one of my favorite things,
and
too.
And I think certainly that's something that we've experienced.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the wonderful things was, for me, was, you know, we work extraordinarily hard, and sometimes you just want to go lay down and close your door and say,
I'm not coming out.
You know what? I'm not coming out.
I'm not
right
coming
now.
Out.
I'm just not coming out.
I'm not present. I'm not here. I'm done.
And I could definitely relate, but I also felt like what he was saying was so true to the Chief.
Yeah.
Which is that the thing that he's failed at, the thing he's worked his entire life for, and he's laying in his OR, which was sad. And, you know, Derek comes in to talk to him, and there's that moment when he says, aren't you supposed to give me a rouse and get back on the horse speech? And Derek says, I've got to stitch up a serial killer. I got nothing in me. And you know that, like, these two men are, in, like, I love their bond, but they're both in so much pain, which is just lovely. And then Bailey shows up at the end with that little adorable break in her voice about the kid not being able to make it, and the Chief realizes that he's got to get up off that table, because no matter what, he's still the Chief.
And you know what? When Bailey comes in earlier and she's complaining about Arizona,
yes.
And the Chief says, you know what? You're no different than anybody. You've got to go out and do it. What I love about that is he's given up, he's taken the day off, but he's still the Chief.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he can't stop doing his job, even when he's not doing his job, which is, he kind of slaps her and says, get on the horse, lady.
Yeah,
do what it
get
is you
going.
Need to. And then he ends up taking his own advice.
Yeah, which is wonderful.
Sometimes you just need a couple of hours off.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
You do.
You just need a little bit of a refresher, which is sort of what he got by lying in the OR and feeling sorry for himself for a little while.
Exactly. Denny and Izzy. I'd like to talk about them, because I feel like there are a couple things that I thought were really lovely, which is, I love that she spends this episode, you know, last episode she sort of said, I don't know if I can choose between the two of you. I kind of want both of you. You both make me happy. And then in this episode, what she's really realizing is, through watching Meredith with the mom and Christina and helping Christina through a date with Owen, is the difference between Alex and Denny, which is, you know, Denny is dead. I don't know if y'all knew that, but he's dead.
He's definitely dead.
He's pretty darn dead.
Definitely, definitely dead.
And that there are all these things that she's never going to be able to experience with him. And for me, I feel like it's not as innocent as that. Like, I just want my boyfriend to be alive. You know, we all just want our boyfriends to be alive.
It's better
it's
than
not
when
that
they're
as
dead.
Much to me as underneath it all for Izzy, there's something bubbling for her that's stronger than just, I'm dating a dead guy, this is a live guy, which is that she knows that there's something inherently wrong with this. She knows that there's something inherently wrong with the fact that she spends the majority of her time with somebody who's not alive. And I love that she sort of can't get enough of Alex and doesn't know what she's going to do about it. And I love the last moment when she says, you know, Denny says, are you breaking up with me? And she says, I think so. I love that. And where it's headed, you will be very surprised to see in the next episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think...
Things are coming to a head.
Yeah, by the way, things are definitely coming to a head. Mm-hmm. It must be really troubling to be seeing a ghost for a really long period of time. Seeing your ex-boyfriend and your dead boyfriend.
Yeah, and she's clearly been in denial about it for quite some time because she's been enjoying herself.
I would say with very, very definitely a lot of denial, but the weird thing is Alex and her growing feelings for Alex are pushing her into the reality that she can't keep denying,
exactly.
Which is really, really, really important.
And I'm saying, you know, if a super cute boy showed up in my house and he might be dead or something, I might go with it because he's super cute and he's Denny.
You know, there's
I might go with it for a while before stopping and going, what's wrong with this picture?
Okay, so I think my vote would have been the drunk guy with the flowers. Your vote is maybe the dead guy. Who knows?
Super cute dead
See,
guy.
See, we all both go in different ways.
Scruff, even though he's not alive.
By the way, what about that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot that that same
dead guys
outfit.
Don't grow scruff. I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
I think if you want them to grow scruff, I think they will grow,
they
scruff.
Grow scruff.
I think that's kind of the way it might work. But and Alex is just, I'm sorry.
He's turning into...
He baked her a cake.
To me, he's turning into probably the most amazing man there.
In the history of America, well, and I just want to remind everyone, always loved Alex. Loved Alex when he gave Izzy a cupcake. Love Alex that he made her a cake.
What I love about him,
for the record.
more than anybody else, is that we're watching him turn into this amazing man.
Totally.
We've watched this journey happen. He wasn't just like, you know, Derek is McDreamy and has always been fairly dreamy. Alex, we're watching sort of become the man we want him to be. And that's been a really interesting journey to watch him go on.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he fares in the face of Izzy and her dead guy. I love the fact that, you know, he basically says you're going through something.
Phone!
He basically says you're going through something, and then he, you know, just kind of ignores it. But I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to ignore it.
Yeah, but he sure is being understanding about it, isn't he?
He's a good guy.
He
is. And you know what? His last girlfriend, a little bit more crazy even.
Yeah, so I think his crazy threshold, probably relatively high.
His mom had bad patches. He knows how to handle the crazy.
He does, and she's at least functioning and doing pretty well, and
she seems
kept her
totally
sense of
normal.
Humor.
Exactly,
which is really, really key in those situations, I think, overall, don't you?
Yes. Next week.
Next week. You know,
something happens to Mark I don't think anyone
could predict
ever expects.
No, and it's unique and
medically accurate.
And we want to tell you ahead of time that it's medically accurate, because I know you are going to be watching TV and you're going to say, those two said this was medically accurate. It's impossible this is medically accurate, but
we do
is.
Medically accurate things. People talked about the fecal transplant that we did. Totally medically accurate. We read several journals on it, talked to several doctors about it, were shocked and appalled, took us several years to write the story because we couldn't believe that it was medically accurate. Totally medically accurate. Happens a lot. More than you'd think. You might find yourself having one day. So there.
You know, that's just so horrible. I can't even wrap my brain around that. That essentially, I'm gonna jump in here and say, don't worry too much about the fecal transplant. Don't worry too much. Just keep eating food and exercising regularly, and
don't abuse antibiotics.
Having a good life, but yeah, don't take the antibiotics unless you absolutely have to, because those super viruses are big.
The other thing that happens in next week's episode, which I think is important, when we last left lovely William Dunn, he was smashing his head against the back of his bed in the place where his brain had been, his skull had been left open.
Because Meredith very helpfully told him that was the case.
I think that might have some consequences. I don't know. What about
you? Think? You think maybe?
I think something might happen about that.
I think that actually might come to a head.
But I'm bummed.
I'll be here all week. Enjoy your steak.
It might go somewhere. Somewhere very interesting. I mean, the thing that I think is interesting, because for us, this is a 3-episode arc story, which we've been working on with Jackson and with William and with the Meredith and Christina fight that we feel very strongly about. And I think that there's something really amazing about what, first of all, it was really startling to me when I saw the first episode in which Meredith and Christina weren't talking.
I've harped on this too. Exactly.
They're such good friends and they're so bonded that it was startling to have that moment where they're walking down the hall together and they're totally silent and you realize, oh my God, they're still not speaking.
Yep.
And to watch where it goes and to get to that point where Meredith says the little mean comment of, you know, some of us have natural talent and some of us have to practice, which is Christina's, you know, thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And really hurts her feelings. To watch where we're headed, you know, people do things when they're arguing that they would not ever do, and it comes out of the pain of not having that person with you. So Meredith's striking out, Christina's striking out, they're both being fairly nasty, and I think that where it goes is so lovely, because honestly, the two of them are a pair, and I find it really hard to watch them apart. So you're going to get to see what happens with that, which I think will be really interesting and expressive.
And I also think what's great, the thing that comes out of it when two best friends are fighting is because you don't have your normal resources, you do go to others, which means relationships start to expand as well.
Well, I think Meredith might not form such a bond with William Dunn.
That was exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what
I
was going to say,
the bond that she forms with William Dunn in the second episode probably wouldn't happen the way it does if she and Christina were talking.
And I'm not sure Christina would be so open to the relationship with Owen if she was still depending on Meredith.
If she could have had Meredith to call up and be like, can you believe this guy got
drunk
and got in my shower, that might have turned out very differently. But because it doesn't happen, it's really interesting.
So I think there's certainly more meat on that bone for the next episode.
Canon,
exactly. And we are going to watch, because it is a 3-episode arc, and we're not kidding you about that. It's a bunch of things which will be really, really coming to fruition next week, which are great to watch.
Yeah. And Izzy and Denny, and what happens with William Dunn, and Jackson Prescott. Bailey's arc over these three episodes is really amazing for us. We haven't seen her face anything like this as a doctor, I don't think ever. And it's really interesting to watch how she deals with it and where she goes with it, and to watch the transition. And that little boy, who is honestly the cutest little thing I've ever seen. Just the cutest little thing I've ever seen, with Samantha Mathis as his mom.
Oh my God,
great.
The whole Make-A-Wish thing.
Yeah, it just heads in a beautiful, amazing direction, which I really, really love.
Trust
and next
us,
week
it's
I'll
good.
Tell you a story. But I can't tell it to you now.
No,
next
you can't
week after
it.
You've seen the episode, I'll tell you a story.
So we're really, really hoping you watch next week. And also, by the way, after you watch next week, you also, of course, watch Private Practice, which is at 10 o'clock.
Yes, okay. Thursday night, 7 o'clock.
Which we're very excited about.
Basically, what we're doing is we're giving you 2 hours of medicine, jam-packed, back-to-back. You
emotional,
little Derek, you
emotional,
little Addison.
Emotional medicine, lots of ethical and moral dilemmas combined with lots of steaminess.
For those of you who like attractive men, you know, we give you some Derek, we give you some McSteamy, we give you some Alex, we give you some Denny. We give you some of everybody. Then you move right on into your Tay Diggs.
Oh my God, just a
Tim
big
Bailey.
Old plate of fun.
Yeah. You know, there's something for everybody.
Which is hopefully a good reason to stick around. So thank you for listening, and sorry.
Please watch our show.
Please. And discount anything you didn't like.
That's it.
That's it.
This is Shonda.
This is Betsy.
Grey's
Anatomy.
Nobody knows where they might. Thanks, Shonda and Betsy. To see how the three-episode arc resolves, be sure to check out Stairway to Heaven on Thursday, January 22nd at 9 p.m. on ABC. Of course, you can get your Grace Fix anytime at abc.com's full episode player. Bye for now! Oh.